Good morning, Colorado Springs. I'm Angela Jones, and it's another brighter day in the neighborhood. Thank you so much for joining us, and join me in welcoming today Sean D. Collins of Parrot Marketing. Is that right?
Correct.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us here today, Sean.
Yeah.
And it's been so cold lately.
Yeah, it just started snowing. I don't know. Well, you know, Colorado, it's the old saying, wait 15 minutes and
right,
you get another variety of weather.
So, right, and it depends on what area of town you're in, whether you're getting the snow or not getting the snow. So.
You know what's interesting about Parrot Marketing? I took out the marketing out of the title.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because people cringe when they hear marketing, and I think I kind of cringed.
You just cringed when I said that?
I heard marketing. I was like, oh, no.
Ooh.
Yeah, no. I heard it's a thing. I didn't know that.
Well, tell
before.
Me about Parrot. Like, where did you get the name Parrot?
We had a name before this one. One of my ex-partners had chosen, and we kind of went along with propaganda marketing. I know.
Okay, propaganda instead of Parrot.
So propaganda and marketing.
Like
you're cringing,
psyops
you're cringing
marketing.
Twice.
Right.
Because it has such a negative connotation, right?
Right.
And Parrot just came out of a brainstorming. It was people like birds.
Mm-hmm.
But as the brand developed, it became a slogan, like your brand on repeat. Parrot's Parrot.
Okay. Yeah.
And even deeper than that, in marketing, you know, truth be told, all marketing companies are the same. The difference is the experience that the client has and the creativity that comes along with it. So what is a marketing company really doing? They're parroting whatever brand you've created.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think, hey, I'm just going to market. I'll be good. No, I'm blowing a trumpet. I'm sounding the alarm. Hey, come look at this. And when they get here, they're going to expect to see something. They're not going to do business just because you blew the trumpet. And so Parrot kind of has this deeper meaning because all we're doing is showing you to the world. But, you know, everybody needs to work on themselves. Everybody needs to bring their best to the table.
Right,
right. And so, you know. So anyway.
That's funny. When I think of parrots, I also think about the colorful, like it's rainbow, there's diversity, you know, kind of a thing theme in there. And the other thing it makes me draws to mind, I've been reading this book called You're a Badass at Making Money.
Okay.
And she tells this story of, I think it was her grandfather who had this parrot that would squawk and talk in Italian, like, or, you know, cuss in Italian or something like that.
Okay.
And I don't know, that's what it brings to my mind.
Okay, the parrot. Okay, from back, kind of back.
But it's just kind of, you know, because you can teach a parrot to say pretty much anything.
Yeah. It's well, kinda, everybody likes birds. I don't know. I tell you, the first time I knew that it was good is when I introduced my company to the next person right after I changed the name, and they smiled.
Oh.
They looked at the logo and they cracked a smile.
Yeah.
And I said, all right, that's it right there.
Well, I will say, when you and I first met, you gave me one of your business cards, and it was like on this metal, and there was this cutout parrot.
Yeah.
So that was really cool.
Well, first impressions are everything,
yeah,
right? So, you know, you gotta, I don't know, just that's what people leave with. And it's funny because I see people who I've given that card to at other events, and they're like, you're the metal card guy.
Right.
Okay, I guess I'm the metal card.
I don't know what you do, but you're the metal card guy.
Yeah, I don't know what you do, and I haven't used your card, but I can't throw it away for some reason.
Yeah.
And so the card kind of hangs around their lives. I don't know what's happening, but you know, there is a three-hit rule in marketing.
Okay.
So, like, you know, if you're driving down the street, you see a billboard, you're like, okay. Drive down that same street, you see the billboard. Kind of know that?
Right.
Third time, oh, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
This is a mental subconscious thing with humans.
Okay.
It's called the three-hit rule.
Okay.
So maybe the card's doing that.
Yeah.
Possibly.
I don't know. I mean, I've seen it at least three times in my stack of cards.
Well, there we go. So it's
and
just
I remember the
cards.
So there's that.
Well, yeah, if it's in a stack of cards, it's probably going to get kind of a contrast to the other cards. Like, wow, that's the special card.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me more about you. Like, you know.
In what context?
Yeah, well, how about, like, you know, I know you didn't grow up in Colorado.
I am not a native.
Okay, so where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Manhattan, New York.
Oh, well, tell me about that. What's that like to actually grow up as a Manhattan kid?
Well, you're groomed to be an a-hole, pretty much.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of like, you know, just all of us are like that out there.
Yeah?
I actually used to say evil is emanating from beneath.
Really?
This is my thing. When I travel, they'd be like, "Oh, you're from New York, huh?" I'd be like, "Yeah, sorry, forgive me," right?
Right.
And I like the Giants, so double forgive
me. Oh, uh-oh.
New York Giants of all teams. But, yeah, I think that it's so many people, mm-hmm. right? Because I've traveled to San Diego. I lived in Mexico for 2 years and then here for about 4 to 5 years. And there's not as many people. So you can actually – and then there's not a lot of high-rises. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you go on a block, there's homes.
Right.
Families. There's only a certain amount of people in those homes. And depending on how long the families have been there, they create this kind of relationship like with community. Their neighbors. Yeah, a community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In New York, you can be on a block and can have 2 high-rises, 30 floors each, mm-hmm. 10 apartments on each floor. We don't know who's living in those apartments. Mm-hmm. Everybody's shopping at the same grocery store.
Right.
Everybody's taking the same public transportation. So what I have realized is that I don't think that we are a-holes or mean people mm-hmm. for no reason. I think it's a defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. And how I prove this out is I've had people who have come to New York while I was living there from other places, and we become friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they go from waving at everybody, giving to every homeless person,
right?
Talking to everybody. It's being really open, which is the culture from wherever Midwest town mm-hmm. they're from or wherever they're from, which is a lower volume of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then in about a month or so, they start stepping over homeless people, not giving any money to anybody, not talking, keeping their head down, and creating this New York demeanor.
Well, and is it about you know, when you're like when I'm on a very crowded, you know, like a bus, even if like at the Denver airport, most of us have been there. And when there's nobody on the train, you know, then, you know, people have a tendency more to be a little friendlier.
Right.
You know, make eye contact. Everybody's got space. But when you're crammed in there, I mean, literally everyone's looking at the ceiling and just trying to keep to themselves because you don't have that personal space bubble that we're all comfortable with. And, you know, and there's some of us who are extroverts and some of us, you know, get our energy from interactions and others who are introverts and nobody's like 100% either way.
Right.
But I think we all need some amount of space at, you know, any given time.
And I think so, you're right.
You know,
you're not going to get it in New York.
Yeah, well, especially not the physical space as much.
Right.
You know,
unless you create that safe space for yourself.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, but it's also a place where, you know, like I've noticed, I love New York City. And
how many times have you been?
Oh, I don't know. Dozens, I would say.
Really? Yeah. For what?
You know, various things. Like we like to do cruises, sort of. We'll fly in and out of New York to do cruises out of like Jersey. There's Jersey cruise.
Yeah.
And then I actually worked in upstate New York right after I graduated from high school at a girls' camp. And so that was the first time I went to New York City. Actually, I think I went to New York City when I was a little baby, but at like 2-3 years old.
Yeah.
I guess my baby toddler. Because my grandmother and my mom's oldest sister lived there.
From what part? Upstate?
I don't really know. No, in New York City.
Okay, in the city.
I don't know what part. So my
Manhattan or just one of the boroughs?
I don't even know. Here's what I do know. So my grandmother, my mother's mom was a World War II bride. And she came over to the United States from France, U.S. soldiers and sailors came in and liberated mm-hmm. Paris. So she moved here and went to live at Norfolk, which was a far cry from Paris. You know what I mean?
Right.
So my grandmother ultimately, and this was, you know, the early 50s, left. And, you know, left, and she had a daughter from a prior relationship, which mm-hmm. is also pretty avant-garde mm-hmm. for that time frame, but left my mom and her younger sister with their father's grandmother, or their father's mom, their grandma, and just went to New York City.
Wow.
Literally. So she took some jobs. Like
To live.
And live there.
For?
So, you know, however long she lived. I know when I got to be a little bit older, maybe 12, something along that line. You know, she was living in Fort Lauderdale.
Okay, so
you know, she moved about this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that might have been, you know, my grandma and that story and all that type of stuff might have been what got me traveling, which is something I'd love to do.
Did you have a relationship with her, or you were into So
yeah, she was my favorite.
Were you old enough to kind of comprehend that relationship?
Well, yeah. I mean, she passed away just a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just was a few tough? Years ago.
Did she have a little residual New York?
She was, yes. I mean, but I think it could be residual Paris, residual maybe New York, residual,
experience period.
Well, just a woman who ventures out, especially like in the early 50s, gets a divorce, strikes out on her own, has just got a certain amount of grit and sense of adventure. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I want to talk to you about Mexico. The first time I went out of the country, I had gone to visit her and my aunt living in San Diego. My grandmother was actually in Huntington Beach. She was San Diego. And I went to Tijuana, so that was my first out of the country experience.
Just to party?
Just because I wasn't even old enough to party.
So
we went there for, shopping over the border and tacos, really.
Yeah, yeah. Tacos are the best.
Yeah, they were really great. Yeah. Not the kind you get here. But
No.
Where'd they live down there?
A place called Alta Brisas, which is like 20 minutes up the mountain from Tijuana.
Okay.
And I moved there because it was housing. It was like a home. It was like 1,200, three bedroom, two floors.
Right.
The area I lived in, I found this out later. That's why I moved. Only cops and cartel members lived there.
All right.
That's why it was so clean. It's just this reverse thing. People knew not to come over there and cut up.
Right.
You go outside of that area, it's bad.
Yeah, it can be. Right.
Yeah. So I just kind of drove from the area to the border.
Right.
And did that for work. A little while.
So you would go back and forth across the border for work and you just live there.
Yes.
For the housing prices.
Pretty much.
That's pretty smart.
Pretty much.
Because Southern California is expensive.
San Diego is like New York. I didn't know that until I got there.
Well, Colorado's getting to be like New York.
Colorado's already like New York. Denver's little New York. Well, and Colorado Springs is fighting against it. This is probably why we have the housing situation, because they stopped building because they didn't want anybody to keep coming.
Right.
And they thought all of their... I'm just guessing. I wasn't here, but I'm guessing they just felt like if we're stern enough, nobody will come anymore. And it actually accelerated. And now the inventory on the market is,
It's just a beautiful place to live. There's so much.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. But Mexico was an experience, I'll tell you. I was living in San Diego first, and then I started living in San Diego again. Mm-hmm. And then I ultimately went back to New York. Okay. And, I went out there for marketing and consulting, same reason I came out here. And, I became a fanatic, a Christian fanatic, actually.
Nice.
I found
God
out there, and I went all in, really.
Right. Oh,
and
neat.
I started to actually despise capitalism, money.
Hmm.
I thought it was evil. Hmm. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
That's
this
okay. Where are you at on all that now?
I still believe in God. I still believe in Christ. I'm just not. I think I read the Bible three times, right?
Okay.
Randomly.
Beginning to end.
Beginning to end. Well, I was, being involved with church, there were certain scriptures that I may teach on or maybe taught or Bible study or whatever. But in my own time, I made it my point to read the Bible from cover to cover.
Okay.
It's in there still. Scriptures come out. I don't necessarily know the address, but it's in me. It's a living word in me. Mm. But I tell you, there was a person I was really close with, and she's like an auntie, if you will. Mm-hmm. And she left. She went to another church teaching the Bible.
Right.
Loving Jesus. And my pastor and some of the deacons and who I love, and these are men of God. These are not bad people. Kind of gave her a hard time a little bit. And I felt like I was a Pharisee or a Sadducee, to be quite honest.
Okay.
Because I don't know, I think maybe I was taking the Bible so literal.
Yeah.
Because I was so pushing back against what I've been doing the whole time, which is capitalism. Mm-hmm. I'm a capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
But I just didn't really appreciate that. And there were other things, things that we would do in the church. And this is not about my church. I thank God for the church that I found God with and the people there. I don't know where I'd be if I did not, because I was really living pretty fast. Right. And but I just felt like, it wasn't really about going out as much as it was about bringing people in. Which it is about bringing people in, but the people we need to bring in are out there.
Right.
And so, you just kind of get in this this rigmarole, and it just turned me off, to be honest.
And it's relationships. There's always rigmarole.
Well, you started when you're talking this with about, the people thing, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know. I don't know why I'm off on this tangent, but
that's
you know, now I still believe, obviously. But when I went back to New York, God showed up even greater.
Okay.
Because I was just me. You know, I tried to go to a couple of churches. I didn't really get the vibe. Mm. And, you know, I pray. Yeah. I meditate. I don't read the Bible as much as I should. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, though, a friend of mine's business mm-hmm. associate mm-hmm. invited me to Discovery Church.
Okay, here
and
in
I
Springs?
Went, yeah.
Okay.
It's on Academy.
Okay.
And I went, and it was nice. Mm-hmm. And I didn't go again for a while. And then another friend invited me. And I was like, might be something to this. Mm-hmm. And I went, and it was great. Mm-hmm. And I went again. And so I've gone 3 times.
Okay.
So I plan on going on Sunday.
That's awesome.
So maybe I could string together a couple of Sundays and kind of get back into that and get a little bit more centered. I think my focus has really been getting my company to $100 million revenue yearly, which is a huge undertaking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I don't know. It's a balance, right? You know, I found myself before Christ, I was like this dragon of a salesperson. Mm-hmm. I was very good. Mm-hmm. Anywhere I went, mm-hmm. I became number one in a matter of months.
Right.
I was very good. I was very focused. Mm-hmm. All I was thinking about is sales. And that whole capitalist kind of thing. Then I started to hate myself when I became a Christian because I took it so literal. It's just like, money is not, what are we doing here?
Right.
And then when I came away from it, I kind of got a better perspective. Mm-hmm. So now I was kind of trying to keep the balance. Right now, I don't even sell the way I used to. I'm like soft shoe selling. And interesting enough, because of capitalism, that it doesn't, it kind of, you have to sell.
Yeah.
And that's a conflict now,
let's
to be
talk
honest.
About, let's talk about that. So I was recently on a flight from Colorado mm-hmm. down to Florida. And I got into a very interesting conversation with an older gentleman and a young man, mm-hmm. too. They were talking about capitalism and, you know, just considering, you know, sort of the perspectives of, you know, without getting political here, and I'm not going to share my specific take on it, but the ideas were, is capitalism, you know, beneficial or is it inherently exploitive? And I think that's where you're kind of.
Oh my God. Is your answer? I'll give you mine, but
Well, I'm not going to say what mine is right here and right now.
Okay.
Because it would be this whole other conversation, makes sense.
Let's roll.
We're rolling just a second.
Okay.
But I'd like to delve into, like with you, like the sales, like this idea that sales is, you know, it's either like you are like some kind of dragon, harsh, this, that, and the other, or you're, you know, you can be Mickey Mousing around. Here's my perspective on sales.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you know, sales is a service. Mm-hmm. Okay, people, like you said, you know, people come, you know, to you for market. You know, people come to get marketing, and really, it's all about the experience. People come to any service company, most products too, because they have a problem they need to solve,
right.
Or you know, even if that problem is, you know, I want to be esteemed more reputation wise, mm-hmm. For the clothing that I wear. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's. I've got a problem, you know, hey, you got a problem, yo, I'll solve it.
Right.
And the sales conversation, you know, for me is always about, like, I want to understand what your need is, and then I'll determine, you know, basically because I know what I do,
right.
I'll determine whether that is something we can help you with. And if so, we can have forward that conversation to, hey, this is how I think I could assist you here.
Right.
But if it's not a good fit on either side, let me help you get connected with somebody that can address what you're going on. And to me, it's always a service, you know, to the extent that someone gets compensated for services that they provide. I don't think that's inherently evil. I think that's the way that the world works, you know what I mean? I mean, I could go in and be kind and smile and thank them on my groceries. I'm gonna buy your groceries.
The Bible says every man is a woman is worth their wage.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think
it's evil to.
Not at all. You're right. And I think, you know, I think a lot of us have, we can get very charged. We have a lot of this is emotional charge around money. And you know, so I don't think money is just a tool any more than like a microphone is not an inherently evil tool.
Yeah.
Now, if you use this microphone to cut people off when they're talking, be disruptive. You know what I mean? Because there's a time and a place for everything. You know, if all I care about in the world is being on this microphone so that I neglect my responsibilities, you know, to people, you know what I mean? And for people, then the microphone is not really the problem.
Right.
It's what's going on with my heart that's the problem. Mm-hmm. And that kind of brings me back to this idea of like what you were talking about in the church. To me, in any, and I don't care what organization it's in, we all need to belong. You know, we find that place in the world that we belong. But, you know, inherent to that is that we're all imperfect, right? And, you know, because of that, it's almost inevitable that we're going to be wounded in these relationships. And, you know, what I'm loving to hear from you is that you delved into these relationships and you experienced some hurt, but you've given yourself enough time and space to kind of be willing to re-engage, because that's really when we, you know, when we are willing to re-engage, it shows, you know, a generosity. Because quite frankly, when we go into that protection mode, you know, I'm going to keep myself from being
right,
hurt.
Right.
Not only are we depriving ourselves of like basically the oxygen, the relational oxygen that we need to thrive, but you're depriving all those people.
I agree.
At the Discovery Church or whatever other church that you find your part of, again, of you. And that's a darn shame. I mean, I've been sitting here with you, you know, what, about maybe 20 minutes. And I think I'd be worse off if I hadn't had this time with you today.
Thank you. So. Well, I mean, what you said about problems is probably spot on. And that it's, you know, and it's a lot of stuff you said there that I was kind of like, that's good. That's good. A lot of gems in there. And I believe that when smart, capable, grown adults that don't understand a subject matter, especially if they need it, become almost like children. But we're not children. We stand up, even though we should submit to whatever that intelligence or information to help.
Sure.
Right now, with the setup and how I sell is problem-based. I create four reports. Show you. I generate the reports. The reports are created from the Google, interfacing with the Google algorithm using a software that we use, whatever. And then those reports tell me where you're hurting in those areas. I show that to you. And most people that see the reports don't know what the report is. So I have to
I've
help them.
I've seen some reports like that, and I'm kind of like, oh, this is great. This is my SEO metrics. What does that mean?
This is the thing. Exactly. So then what happens is it becomes an education, and that education is not always received, if you will, in a sense that lets them see the value of fixing those problems.
Right, right.
And this is where the sales comes in.
Right. Well, and it's helping people. Like, there it is. It's like there is a, absolutely an education.
And this is where it can become
component.
A little bit push because just like children, you tell them what's good for them. I mean, I was just talking with one of the, you know, the people that own this station. They were talking about something. Something that's very good for us.
Right.
And I'm pushing back.
Right.
Because I don't fully understand it, although I have a comprehension of it.
Right.
Would I spend what it cost? Maybe. After time, after being sold more.
Or if you were, if you were educated to the point that you realized that not only you have a problem, because sometimes you don't even know you have a problem.
This is true.
Not only do you have a problem, but this is a solution, a viable solution to that problem.
Here's the thing, right? I've had people call me four times, five times for something I do need. And on the fifth time, I'm like, oh, glad you called.
Right.
But if they didn't call me, I'd be floating around and then somebody else would randomly come along and probably get that sale based on all the work that they spent.
Sure.
The point is a push.
Yeah.
And it's an uncomfortable push that still comes along with it. This soft shoe that I've embarked on almost is like breadcrumbs and I hope they follow. And what I'm realizing, again, because I was this dragon before, is that's not how sales works.
Yeah.
sales you have to push, and I don't want to necessarily.
Yeah.
And this is a conflict with me, I guess, which it probably shouldn't be a conflict.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, I don't know. We're just talking.
Well, we only have a few more minutes, so I'll just kind of end on this note, which is, you know, most change, and we even see this in the world. You know, you're on this end, and then you make a dramatic shift to this end, and then it tends to settle. Eventually. Yeah. And sometimes it does the rocking back and forth to settle in the middle. But it sounds you're absolutely on the right path. So, Sean, where can people get a hold of you to find out more about Parrot and your edutainment or education style?
Parrot, we've been around coming up on 3 years, where we just passed our 3 years at the beginning top of this year, so kind of happy for that. The Parrot approach has been more about advertising, which takes a lot of money and time.
Right.
We've created a smaller brand called Sales Cake.
Okay.
And Sales Cake is like a digital solutions.
Nice.
So like CRM, website, social media, making sure your SEO is together, your information is streamlined online. This is kind of where Sales Cake is. So if you want to kind of learn more about that, you can go to salescake.co.
Okay.
Again, salescake.co.
All right.
And it has all of the services, what we're about, why we do what we do. You may see a picture of me on there.
That's awesome.
So, anybody that's looking to see more visibility online, definitely hit the website up.
All right. So, Sean Collins, you can reach him at Parrot, not Parrot Marketing, just Parrot, right. And salescake.co.
Correct.
And I want to thank you all for joining us for another brighter day in the neighborhood. We are here this same time and station every week. And until we have a chance to visit with you again, have a brighter day.